Okay, are we ready to go? Let's see if Tom Gimbel is all set here. Tom Gimbel generally joins us, often joins us at this time. Tom, let's see if the phone lines are working. Are you ready to roll?
I'm ready to roll, John. I don't know what was going on with my phone there.
It's okay. Stand by. Let me get my notes about you out. Tom can talk about how companies can further support working parents when kids are home. Boy, this is a timely topic for summer break. What are you thinking about, Tom, from the LaSalle Network?
I think we're just in a situation now where we've got more dual-income families than we've ever had in the history of the country. And I'm a firm believer, as you know, that I believe in the office is really valuable. However, at the same time, life is a give and take. And I think that the best managers, and I don't think there's a blanket exercise for everybody, because there's plenty of parents out there that whether they have grandparent support or they have nannies or whatever they do, that they want to be in the office all the time or they want to be working. There's other people that aren't in management, and they need to make sure that they're home for their kids. I think the best thing you can do as a company is really listen to what people's needs are and lay out the expectations and then help the employee find a solution to accomplish both.
Are you surprised standing here today in 2023 at how entrenched people are in their views on work at home, work in the office, hybrid? I mean, this didn't even exist as a conversation really before March of 2020. And now people are concrete. I mean, these are fighting words. Who knew below the surface?
I think it wasn't below the surface because people didn't know. And I was writing a post and a piece myself that I feel like you tapped into my phone. But I think that it's now become something that employees want to make as a right versus a perk. You know, it really is. Working in the office or remote work is the same as what type of health insurance is provided and how many weeks vacation and what the bonus structure is. Is that it's one of the things that an employer offers. And maybe they have it and maybe they don't. And maybe you prioritize that and maybe you don't. And it's not a right, it's a privilege or a perk. And I think that that's one of the things. What we've got is just another situation of entitlement of people in this country. And I think, listen, if somebody goes out and risks their livelihood to start a company, they make the rules. And I've used this analogy before, John, with you. If you want to bring in a babysitter and to come to your house and babysit your kids, the assumption is they're coming to your house and they're going to be with their kid at your house. Maybe they go to the park. If all of a sudden they drive that kid to their home 30 minutes away and you don't know where they're at, you don't like it. That's not what you want. And it's the same thing for corporate America, is that the person who's paying the bills gets to make a decision on where the person works. And you don't have to accept the job, nor do you have to do it.
But the idea for our chat right now is that employers, at least in the summer, should what? Should they recognize that the kids are home?
And they should recognize it.
Life
absolutely.
Is, okay, so
yeah, it doesn't have to be work from home. It doesn't have to be remote work. What it means is this, is you can't be a full-time parent without any daycare or any camp or any school and have a full-time job. You couldn't do it if you worked at Target at the register. You can't do it if you're driving a truck, and you can't do it if you're working in an office. However, if it means that you come in early so you can get your kid at pickup after daycare or day camp, or you let them work from home on Fridays, it's coming up with a solution where there's compromise and realizing that that's the value of a flexible employer. But does it work for everybody? Maybe not. If you're working in a call center and you have to be there, it may not be possible for you. But it may be possible if you have a different role.
Yeah.
And some things are fair in life and some aren't. But you can't yell at the company because they expect certain things for what they pay. If there's as long as there's supply and demand, you have the situation.
I understand that, and we'll have to have more of this conversation another day. We've had various versions of it in the past, but what I think I also hear you say is that the smart employer will be as flexible as he can to keep good people, right?
Yeah, I would say as flexible as she can instead of he, but yes, I think that's an important aspect, John, is to realize what that person. Now, the main thing that no one ever talks about, John, is have clear expectations on the deliverables. So I'm going to give you this flexibility, but yeah, I need to have this done by this time on this day. And if you can deliver it, then you've earned the right to have that.
That's Tom Gimbel, founder and CEO at LaSalle Network, thelasallenetwork.com. We'll talk again, Tom. Thank you.
Stay healthy and use sunblock, John.
That's good advice from Mr. Gimbel. Okay, Philip Weiss is a regular guest, too. He is the president of SciFarth at Work. And he joins us now about virtual meetings, which kind of reminds me of what Tom Gimbel was talking about a moment ago. Philip, our previous guest, was just talking about work at home, work in the office, hybrid. Bosses need to be flexible as they can be, but remember, you're working for them. Now, why don't you talk to us about virtual meeting vices?
Yeah, John, this is actually a really nice companion to that last discussion. As you discussed with Tom, a lot of employees are very happy with the option of working remotely. Maybe not all, but many. The issue is they've been a little bit exhausted, even those that enjoy it, by the requirement to be on these virtual real-time video meetings. Back in the brick-and-mortar office, as we all know, when you meet people, that is your break from staring at the computer in many jobs. In the new remote or hybrid work world, it's your most intense time because you got to stare at the screen, look at the data, look at the people, etc. The result, frankly, is especially in 2023, employees beginning to lose some of their what we might call digital decorum, acting up, acting inappropriate, and taking risks.
I'm thinking of Zoom meetings, which are business meetings where somebody's wearing a wrinkled T-shirt because they didn't come into the office today. Is that one of the things you're talking about?
Yes, that is actually how this whole process, the dominoes started falling in terms of employees getting more cavalier with their online conduct. When you go to the office, you're taking the time to get ready and leave the house. When you're walking from your bedroom to your home office or your dining room table, you don't have that transitional time period. So it starts with a little less care, but it's really expanded. The risks have developed. So now recent surveys, including some that we've taken of remote workers, show that while 4 to 5% of people were wearing sweatpants in 2020, that's up to about 20 to 25% of people in these online meetings. Now 40% of people admit to not even combing their hair carefully or showering before the online workday begins, and others are noticing. So what you've described is the beginning of a process, and of course, there's the whole wardrobe malfunction issue. If you're not careful, employees think their video is off and they're not properly dressed, and in fact, it's on. So we know that care, both before and during the meeting, is critical.
What do you make of doing household chores while you're on the company clock, throwing in a load of laundry, maybe even folding the laundry while you're following a Zoom meeting or working for the boss? You could prepare dinner, for that matter, if you're a multitasker. What do you make of all of that?
Yeah, it is a clear and irrefutable reality of where we are, especially if you're on a conference call or the camera can be off. People take full advantage of that to get other chores done. The issue from the employer's standpoint is, number one, employees are expected to pay attention. And in fact, if they are paying attention, they're more likely to contribute creative or new ideas, listen for issues that they should be addressing. So we've got companies now, John, to your point, taking extra efforts to let people know before the meeting, we're expecting everyone to share thoughts at different points.
Oh.
We're not going to necessarily tell you exactly where that is, but we need your participation.
Mm-hmm.
So be on the alert. And they've actually found that momentary reminder that you're kind of on call to be really engaged can make a difference. The second piece, of course, is by modeling. A key manager being on that video and having her or his or their camera on and letting people know we deem this to be important. You may not always want to require it, but you can model it. Well, certainly people are less likely to be doing the laundry while in front of the video camera. So there's a lot of very small but critically helpful tips that can be used by managers.
Reminds me of the teacher suddenly calling on you when you weren't paying attention in class. Can you give me some examples of mistakes that people make or mistakes that the employers made? I'm also thinking, by the way, the phenomenon of you texting with colleagues or chatting privately during a business meeting. But what have you got for me along those lines?
Yeah, those are both kind of hitting the nail on the head in terms of what companies are calling us to help them address. So to your two points, we're now working with a digital graphics company, so a bunch of creative folks there, but somebody was working from home, probably doing the wash, inattentive, and then they realized, you know, I still want to be creative, but I don't want to necessarily pay attention to this meeting. And they started sharing videos that they created of their own team member in avatar form hugging one another, and then managers and employees hugging one another. So all kinds of combinations of affection among coworkers, and that reached management, and the employee was disciplined for both sharing the video as well as creating it on the company system. So that's a sign of somebody whose attention could be far better used given their skills. Another quick example, John, is speaking of this chatting, employees having sort of sidebars while they're on a video call. Recently, we helped a local marketing company because while on Zooms, some of their employees were privately ranking their coworkers with each other, kind of ranking them on their Zoom hotness or attractiveness by either putting them in the close-up or camera-off category. And you can assume what that means in terms of the beauty level. That led to a full investigation, and one employee who was put in the camera-off category threatened to sue. And so that cost the company on morale and time and money. So you're 100% right. It's about side conduct, and it's about distractions as well.
One last text from our listeners. My daughter decided to take the Friday working at home option instead of getting a raise. How about that? That's not exactly what you and I are talking about. That's more what Tom and I were talking about. But what's your quick reaction to that?
Yeah, in many industries, it is a completely viable and, in fact, kind of an advantageous approach, like kind of Freedom Friday, so to speak. That's useful because if you're a company that does not have deadlines at the end of the week, you give your employees more time to rejuvenate and you let them know that you want them to be there in more ways than one the rest of the week. So it can be a great strategy to agree to as long as you offer it to anybody whose job allows it.
Philip Weiss is the president of Seyfarth at Work, seyfarthatwork.com. Okay, Philip, thanks again. We'll visit another day.
Pleasure speaking. Thanks, John.
Jason Turner is a chief investment strategist at Wintrust Wealth Management, and he joins us to kind of give us an update on where the markets are and where things are going generally this week. Jason, how are you?
Doing well, John. How about you?
I'm good, and wondering, how are we doing this week? What do you make of the markets today?
Well, today we're looking at markets that are pulling back a little bit. The Nasdaq's about even now, but all three major indices were down for most of the morning after a pretty big week last week. And this seems to be the market taking a breath between last week's rebound and maybe some news coming next week and the week after that'll be bearing on the Fed's meeting in July.
Yeah, sure. And a day and a week, that's such a tiny slice, it doesn't matter. But the first half of the year has been pretty good, right?
Yeah, the first half of the year has been pretty good when you look at the indexes on a top-line basis. Peel back the onion a little bit, and you see about a dozen stocks in the S&P 500 that have really been the leaders on a year-to-date basis, with most of the rest of the stocks just marginally positive for the year-to-date period.
Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out what box to put that in. I mean, does that compromise the entire little bit of a bull market that we've had, at least on the S&P, or is that okay?
I wouldn't say it compromises it. You know, stocks are up, and usually the big first half of the year translates into a bigger, broader second half of the year. So it's entirely plausible that we're just seeing pretty narrow leadership at the start of the year that might emerge as broader leadership as we move on through the balance of the year, and we get a little more certainty on what the Fed is going to do after the July meeting.
Yeah. Do you think that's going to happen? I'm not asking you to predict what the Fed's going to do, but do you think that we'll see a little more broadly based strength in the markets?
I think we're likely to see maybe some weakness in the markets before we see some broad-based strength. There's still a decent amount of negativity floating out there. A lot of folks still projecting recession before the end of the year. And a number of economic data points that have yet to really show the ramifications of the Fed's pretty hawkish policy over the last 18 months or so.
Well, do you like the pause that we're in right now?
Yeah, I like the market taking a pause, reflecting on where valuations sit, not throwing itself into irrational exuberance and following on a strong week last week with a sort of blind faith. Taking a pause here is okay for markets in the longer term. It means maybe we're getting a little bit more rationality for the next several weeks.
But that also means you would understand, you wouldn't run away from another quarter point, maybe even two quarter points, right?
No, not at all. If the market continues its day-long pullback here to pull back over the course of this week, I wouldn't worry at all. We've certainly seen the market march forward through some troubling news over the last 5 weeks. The S&P's been up for 5 weeks in a row, the NASDAQ up 8 weeks in a row. We haven't seen strings like that since 2021. So we're seeing some strength in the market, and if it takes a pause here to reflect and then maybe continue to push forward, and I think that's a natural progression of markets.
Well, if the Fed is trying to figure out what is happening with inflation, inflation has gone down, right? I mean, interpret that for me.
Yeah, inflation has certainly gone down. We've seen inflation peak over 9% on the CPI on a headline basis. If we look at the last 5 months and annualize the last 5 months, headline inflation is running only at about 2.8%. So we've certainly seen inflation pull back over the balance, particularly of 2023. And there's probably still more to come from the Fed's increase in rates to be felt in inflation as consumers continue to slow activity through the balance of this year. So inflation's moderated. Jobs not quite done yet. I think we heard Chair Powell say that last week, that they're still very data dependent. They're going to watch very closely. Reality is they'll get one more set of inflation data before the July meeting. Not much to push them one way or another from a policy perspective.
Right. Although we were talking about this earlier, the New York Times was reporting or commenting on the fact that the inflation numbers are down, but that's in no small part due to the fact that gas prices are down, grocery prices are down. But if you excluded those, which aren't really that much affected by Fed policy, then you don't see inflation off as sharply as it is. So what do we make of that?
Well, if we take those two volatile areas out and look at core inflation, I'll go a step further and take out vehicle sales. We've seen a lot of volatility, particularly in the used car market over the last 12 months. And let's take out shelter, which is housing prices. There's about a 12-month lag there. If we take all of that out, inflation is running right now on an annualized basis over the last 5 months at about 3.6%.
Oh.
Not anywhere near the 2% target the Fed is targeting, but certainly well below where it was at this point last year.
Better than nine. What do you make of the housing market in general right now? Inventory is still tight, right?
Yes, inventory is still tight in the housing market. The current level of mortgage rates have somewhat blunted the demand, particularly for existing homes. They're a little short of their long-run average, but new home construction is trending right about at its long-term average. After being elevated for the couple of years in the middle of the pandemic. So the housing market's a bit of a mixed bag. It's not slowed as much as you would think. 6.5% and 7% mortgage rates would have slowed it. But that's because we've had this undersupply or this persistent lack of homes available for sale. And people are still coming to market. Maybe they're just readjusting their thoughts and taking down the purchase price of the home they thought they were going to be able to afford to adjust for the higher mortgage rates.
Imagine what new construction would be like if rates were lower, right? Because presumably these builders or developers have to borrow money to sort of float the projects before they find buyers. If interest rates are lower, would the stock of homes go up?
They likely would. I think we saw a little boom in 2021 or so of large home builders jumping into large projects, something we haven't seen for a decade or so. With them jumping in and likely securing lower lending rates to start those projects back in 2021, any sort of delay from higher lending rates on the builder side likely doesn't come for a year or two.
Okay. Any last thought from you today as we just kind of take an early week look at the markets and the economy?
Well, and one last thought for the rest of the week, holiday shortened week, a lack of a lot of economic news or data points that would move the markets. So I would imagine we get this sideways pattern in markets for the remainder of this week before we start seeing a little bit more data on retail sales and others in the coming weeks.
Well, I can take a breath. I'm okay with that. That's Jason Turner, Chief Investment Strategist at Wintrust Wealth Management. Thanks a lot, Jason. Nice to talk to you today.
Good talking to you, John.
On WGN, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got more business news. Here is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Rivian Automotive says it will incorporate Tesla's electric vehicle charging system into future vehicles. The company produces EV pickup trucks in downstate Normal. The move means Rivian will gain access to Tesla's supercharger network. The company joined several others, including Ford, in adopting the Tesla system. It's rapidly becoming the industry standard. Starting next year, Rivian drivers will get access to more than 12,000 Tesla superchargers in the U.S. and Canada. Chicago is one of the cities where Domino's Pizza is launching a new service called Pinpoint Delivery. The new technology allows customers to get a pizza delivery nearly anywhere, including places like Grant Park or North Avenue Beach. Customers use the Domino's app to drop a pin on a map to get pizza delivered to that location. The company says it's the first quick-service restaurant brand in the U.S. to deliver food to customers with the drop of a pin. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, now let's do the business of food, and here's Steve Alexander.
Yes, and we are happy to be sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDrivesChicago.com. When you think of croutons, what one word comes to mind? How about stale?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
So, Matt Waxman and his big brother, John.
He's 6'4", I'm 5'8".
Put their years of experience in the food and financial businesses together and decided,
let's start a crouton company. Let's make a better crouton.
Their goal? Reinvent the crouton category with an all-natural sourdough version made with organic flour. A crouton that doesn't taste stale, fresh out of the package.
And we wanted it to be crunchy, where it holds up in a salad or a soup, but also light enough that you can just pop them in your mouth and snack on them.
And they named it Kooshy.
So that is K-O-O-S-H-Y. It actually comes from the French word couche, which is spelled differently, C-O-U-C-H-E. And that kind of really speaks to our dedication to artisan bread making. It's a proofing cloth used to proof bread and baguettes.
Kooshy comes in four flavors.
We have Almost Naked, which is sea salt and black pepper and olive oil. Mambo Italiano, our take on that classic Italian garlic, cheese, and basil. The first ever spicy crouton, Poco Picante. It's basically chili and lime. And then the last one, French toast, our most exciting one. We got the first ever sweet crouton. So it's maple sugar and Saigon cinnamon. You can kind of eat it like a candied pecan in salads, or the best salad of all, just some ice cream.
I think he just put ice cream into the salad category. Well, it is National Dairy Month. Waxman says so far the Chicago-born company is doing well.
We're now in 300 to 400 stores, including Mariano's, Fresh Time, and a bunch of other stores in Chicago.
Kooshy Croutons, another innovative food product born in Chicago.
We started making our croutons initially out of the hatchery, and they were another incredible supporter of local brands.
And we'll talk about the hatchery in an upcoming episode. I'm Steve Alexander, and that's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Wow Bao was started by Let Us Entertain You Enterprises in Chicago 20 years ago this August. Wow, they're right on the verge of a 20-year anniversary. Started out small, but like so many things they do, it got really big. Let's talk a little bit about that with Jeff Alexander, the president and CEO at WowBow. Hey, Jeff, you're on WGN. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me today.
So how big is the chain now?
Well, we're bigger than we were 20 years ago, but not as big as we will be. We currently still have three brick-and-mortar stores here in Chicago, but we've grown exponentially in other forms. We've done airports, college campuses. We've done sports stadiums. We do Lollapalooza Music Festival every year. But we've also gotten into the grocery business. We are currently at about 350 grocery stores, mainly based here in Chicago. But in the next 10 weeks, we'll surpass 4,000 grocery stores. We also have about 1,500 sushi counters around the country that are selling our product. and we've done 700 virtual restaurants across the USA and Canada in the last 2 years.
So maybe you don't care so much about the brick-and-mortar stores, or is that an area that you are anxious to expand?
Well, it's not that we don't care about them. We found other ways to grow the business, and the brick-and-mortar stores are always important to us. They're great ways for us to can touch the guest every single day, hear what they have to say, really be involved in the community, give back to the community, and it's also a great place for us to tinker with the concept and test things out before we roll it out on a much larger scale.
Remember the first time I had one of those hot Asian buns, and I just thought, this is a unique experience for me. I have never had this, and it was so good. I love the texture. I love the heat. I love the flavor. I don't know. Tell us what you sell. What is that?
Yeah, I appreciate the accolades you're giving me there for it. And I hope when you first tasted, you actually said, wow. You know, that's what we're trying to get out of everybody.
Yeah, really.
For those who haven't had bao started thousands of years ago in China. It's not something we created. We actually had another concept here in Chicago, still in existence, and let us entertain you, called Big Bowl. And in 1999, we were doing a tasting for Richard Melman, our founder of the company, and we gave him bao as an appetizer for that brand. And he sort of paused and thought, you know, we could do something with this on a much larger scale. And Rich has a habit of having ideas of concepts, and he's got an entire filing cabinet where he puts ideas into. And fast forward to 2002, and Water Tower Place offered a Let Us Entertain You a place to sell gift cards for the holidays. And we took that space, and at the end of the holiday season, they asked us if we wanted to keep running out of that location. The location of Water Tower is still there now 20 years later at the ground floor entrance, has no HVAC, no way to get the heating elements and the smoke and the steam and the odors out of the restaurant, out of the building. But bao is simply steam cooking, which is the cleanest form of cooking that there is. And it's something that everybody can be doing, and steam dissipates. And again, Rich went to his filing cabinet of ideas, remembered bao, and that's what started the concept. And bao is soft, sweet dough. It's about the size of a tennis ball with different meats and vegetables inside. We do traditional Asian flavors like teriyaki chicken, yellow curry, spicy Mongolian beef, and then we've thrown in some American flavors. We do a cheeseburger now, which is fantastic. We do an apple and cinnamon flavor. We also do breakfast flavors, so we have a variety of different flavor profiles of the bao. And over the years, we've expanded the menu to include rice bowls, pot stickers, salads, soups, egg rolls, fried rice. We really made into a much larger concept.
So if you are in charge of, you're the president and CEO of Wow Bao, then what is the relationship to Let Us Entertain You? Is one a subsidiary of the other? Is it an LEYE restaurant? How does that all work?
It's a great question. So last month, I celebrated my 30-year anniversary with Lettuce. I joined Lettuce in 1993, worked on a whole bunch of different concepts, and took over Wow Bao in 2009. We are absolutely a Let Us Entertain You restaurant. In 2017, private equity, Valor Equity Partners, which is a Chicago-based fund, took a majority stake to help us with our growth. Let Us still owns a percentage of the business, and Valor has control of the concept, but Kevin Brown, our CEO of Let Us, and Jay Stieber, our executive vice president and general counsel, both have two of the five seats of the board. Richard Melman, our founder, and R.J. Melman, our president of Let Us, have are advisors to the board. So we use the Let Us Entertain You Test Kitchen. We accept the frequent diner program. Mm-hmm. I talk to the Lettuce guys literally on a daily basis. And as I said, I just celebrated 30 years. And at the same time, we operate independently of Lettuce as a way for us to grow and scale.
I have the Lettuce card in my wallet. So if I go to your restaurant, I can use that there as well, huh?
Absolutely. We'll happily give you points for your meal. Yeah. And we'll happily let you redeem points to pay for your meal.
Well, I got to go, but what's next then? Anything else you want to make sure we know about the chain?
I appreciate you asking that. So we recently just partnered with a hot food vending machine company where we now have refrigerated vending machines. We have about 40 of them or so deployed across the country right now where you can walk up and you can get hot food right out of the machine in about 32 seconds and enjoy your bao. And we're getting those to grow at a rate. And we also recently launched a loyalty membership club. For $99, you get your own digital collectible, which is like an NFT, your own avatar that you can keep and own on the blockchain. And then you also get discounts on your orders and discounts on our merchandise and extra reward points. And we're very excited to still be part of the Chicago community and celebrating 20 years this August.
Wow. Wow. Jeff Alexander is the president and CEO, wowbow.com. Well, congratulations. It's fascinating to hear how innovative you guys are. Thanks for joining us, Jeff.
Appreciate your time. Thank you for having me.